I'm Pamela Peterson, and this is tape number 8 of Women's Issues in Counseling. We're talking about the case of Kate. Kate began to explore the possible connection between frustrating relationships and the development of her tragic vision. During the enlarging and goal-setting stage of counseling, Kate visited her parents. She came back from the visit depressed, feeling that it had been a disaster. At home, she had found herself caught up between her parents as they argued with each other. Her mother would verbally attack her mother, and her mother would not defend herself. Kate suddenly felt very angry and trapped. She expressed frustration that her mother never defended herself and that she always found herself coming to her mother's defense. She said pleadingly, "I wish my mother would defend herself sometime." She saw that her feelings of being trapped were related to being caught in the middle, and she dreaded going home because of this. Her siding with her mother caused alienation between Kate and her father, but if she didn't side with her mother, she risked losing her mother's affection. Kate's recounting of this visit triggered in her the feeling of being damned if I do and damned if I don't. She also expressed feelings of loss because of the relationship between her and her father. She always felt put down by him, and siding with her mother further increased her father's put-downs. Kate's relationships with her parents had set the stage for her developing the tragic vision. There was a direct relationship between Kate's tragic vision and her feeling of being hopelessly trapped between her father and mother. In this tragic vision, there was no escaping her predicament. Symbolically, this became the story of her own life. She had internalized her tragic role in taking her mother's side while feeling increasingly alienated from her father. This frustrating struggle between her parents became an internal struggle and part of her own personality, a constant source of internal frustration and a continuing source of self-sabotage. The internalized saboteur was the source of Kate's tragic perspective in life. Her seeking to support her mother against her father put her in a predicament that perpetually frustrated her needs for nurture. As far back as she could remember, this kind of dynamic had existed in her life. She had always been aware of the tension between her parents, and when she became a teenager, she sided with her mother against her father. She felt this doomed her to a life of continual frustration. Kate was able to see a connection between the tragic vision she was living out and her relationship with her parents. When she made this connection, her feelings about God began to change. Earlier in the intake phase of counseling, she had equated the tragic vision with God's absence in her life. She had also seen God as the author of her predicament. Now, however, she gradually began to see that God was not a hostile or pitiless deity who opposed her growth and development. Kate's discovery that the origins of her tragic vision were rooted in her struggle within her family of birth helped her to enlarge her understanding of her predicament. She could begin to address her goal of tracing how the tragic vision had developed. She also began to see that her goals in counseling needed to focus on past frustrating relationships with other significant persons, including her brothers and sister. Understanding the theological issues that undergird the tragic vision can also help clarify the goals of counseling. Kate began to see that the development of her tragic vision had been the result of a subtle inner process. That is, she began to see that some choices she had made at a vulnerable stage in her life had contributed to the tragic vision. In her choices, key theological issues were expressed. Kate limited her perspective in life to the frustrating relationship between her father and mother, and this frustrating relationship became the center of her vision for life. As such, this idol was the norm for evaluating herself, her feelings, and her relationships with others. She then saw everything through this tragic vision in a form of idolatry. When Kate realized that the tragic vision had developed partially because of her own response to frustrating relationships, she began to see clearly that God had led her to counseling to move her toward truth. She also began to see that she had contributed to the narrow perspective that was preventing her growth. She made up her mind to try to reorient her life in a different perspective with God's help and the help of counseling. In a real sense, she gave up her idolatrous view of life. During phase two of counseling, Kate discovered the biblical narrative that undergirded her tragic vision. In her own daily Bible study, she found the story of Moses, Joshua, and Caleb to be helpful in expressing the nature of her tragic suffering. When Kate read this story, she said that all her life she had identified with the spies who brought back the majority report. She had limited her life to the negative things she had experienced while ignoring the positive things. By identifying with the majority of the spies, she had made a decision that locked her into a negative plot, leading to even more frustration. As Kate began to reflect on the plot being lived out by the majority of the spies, she also began to reflect on her life. Her life was full of experiences of living out a tragic script. She began to see how she had been trapped by her struggles in the family of origin, and how she was still contributing to her problems by identifying with this story. She began to see the connection between her identification with this story and her long struggle and frustration with pain. The hope that Kate experienced was related to Joshua and Caleb. She began to wonder what her life would have been like had she identified with them. She also began to see clearly how she needed to proceed in counseling. Her goal became to have the faith of Joshua and Caleb. She saw God holding out a future for her, and she would have to begin by following God's leadership, much as the children of Israel followed God to the promised land. God's leadership would unfold in steps along the road. Kate began to see that she had made certain choices that limited her own growth. She began to see that God was not against her and that she needed to pay closer attention to what God was doing now to set her free. She had discovered an anti-tragic perspective in the Numbers story, and she wanted to identify with the story that led to a promise of hope beyond tragedy. Having discovered a new plot for her life, she now saw God taking significant steps to make her life more complete. She experienced God interceding on her behalf. Some reflection on Romans 8:26 helped me as a pastoral counselor to understand Kate's new awareness of God's presence in her life. Romans 8 highlights the fact that the world is divided into two ages, the old age, full of suffering and pain, and the new age, where God will reign and suffering and death will be overcome. The new age was inaugurated by Jesus Christ, but its full completion will come at the end of time. In the meantime, people live between the ages. The old still influences people, but the Spirit intercedes on our behalf. Kate's awareness of God's faithfulness became a moment for prayer. She desired to pray for what was taking place in her life. She felt closer to God than she had felt in a long time. She was glad she had discovered the source of the tragic vision. When I prayed with Kate, I felt Kate's appreciation toward God and how relieved she was to find the true origin of her tragic vision. Our prayer discussion had moved into prayer, in that our discussion of God had become a dialogue with God. Kate felt God's presence in the counseling session that day, and so did I. Prayer was a natural outcome of our awareness of God's presence in the counseling session. Kate and I had become clear on the goals that her counseling would address. Our goals involved 1. Exploration of past relations that had influenced the development of her tragic vision, and 2. Cooperation with God as God sought to lead her into the future. Cooperation with God through the counseling process began the third stage of pastoral counseling for Kate. Intentional cooperation with what God is doing involves spiritual direction. The one who is acting the role of the spiritual director helps a person to discern God's leadership in his or her life. The goal is to aid the person under direction to trust this unfolding awareness and cooperate with the direction in which God is leading. Kate had many blocks in her life that she needed to deal with in order to grasp the future toward which God was leading her. Many painful experiences had to be addressed so they would not continue to hinder her spiritual pilgrimage. The tragic story, still asserting itself, had to be changed. In other words, Kate needed to clear away the emotional and narrative block, or the sinful thoughts and behavior. that were obstructing her growth at the same time that she pursued God's unfolding vision for her future. Stage 3 of the discernment model of pastoral counseling seeks to help persons move toward achieving those goals that were clarified in Stage 2. Although the goals may be clear, the process of achieving them through counseling is like a drama with several plots unfolding at once. One unfolding plot would follow God's intention for the person. Opposed to that is the tragic plot that still asserts itself and resists letting go of the person's life. Frustrating experiences from the past, as well as patterns of behavior related to them, need to be worked through. This dynamic and dramatic mix means that we see setbacks as well as progress toward the goals we have set for counseling. How the pastoral counselor helps the counselee to negotiate both progress and setbacks constitutes the third stage of counseling. With Kate, several troubling themes had appeared in stages 1 and 2 of the counseling and then reappeared in stage 3. These themes needed to be dealt with in depth once we had set the direction and goals for counseling. In stages 1 and 2, Kate had experienced suffering as captivity. In that captivity, she experienced God as absent from her life. She equated suffering with the absence, silence, indifference, and rejection of God. She described God as abandoning her and as being angry at her. She felt that her illness was punishment from God for some unidentifiable wrong committed. Yet Kate felt an emerging awareness that God had not abandoned her, that God was present in her life. The experience of God's presence in her life in the midst of suffering became the hope that propelled her. Although Kate had expressed a sense of God's absence during suffering, she also said that she experienced God as a warm presence attending to her and visiting her when suffering was most severe. One night when the pain was most severe, she had asked God to take her out of this life if God was not going to heal her. When I asked how she had made it through the night, she described an experience of God's presence and warmth that had sustained her until morning when the pain seemed to lessen. In stage 3, the issue of whether God was absent emerged again. My initial reaction was wonder. How could Kate have forgotten what was accomplished in stages 1 and 2? However, issues from previous stages do emerge over and over again, needing to be reintegrated into the next stage of counseling. When they appear, the progress that the person has made in dealing with the issue often becomes apparent as the interview progresses. Exploration of the meaning of God's presence in her life and what God was doing became important issues during one counseling session in Stage 3. This session began with an exploration of Kate's feelings of disappointment over the failure of both medicine and her faith to bring healing more quickly. Our verbal interaction began with an exploration of her disappointment. However, such exploration revealed that Kate was now working on deeper issues than she had in earlier phases. Parenthetically, Wimberly now recounts the following conversation with Kate in the form of what is known as a verbatim, a word-for-word account of what is said by both parties. You may want to use this format in your case study to present material that is particularly critical to the case. It's written in the form of a drama script. Wimberly begins by saying, "You seem to be disappointed that medicine and faith in God have not made much improvement in your health." "Yes, this is true. I've heard others say that I should have more faith and rely more on God than doctors. I believe that God works through medicine and doctors, and this is part of being faithful. But neither medicine nor faith seems to help." "You seem to have the feeling that nothing will work for you." "Yes, this is so depressing for me." "If God does not appear to be working through medicine and through your faith, where do you suppose that God is at work?" "It's interesting that you should ask this question. Recently, I've been thinking about this very issue. I've almost come to the conclusion that physical healing may not be the area of God's concern for me at this time. I believe that my physical healing will eventually come, but that's not the area that needs the most attention now." "Say more." "I think God may be telling me that there are some personal things I need to attend to right now." You feel that God is leading you to work on things that might be hindering your getting well? Yes. Could you say a little more about where you see God at work in your life, particularly in the emotional area? For a long time, I felt that God had been punishing me for things I had done in my life. I felt that God was giving me what I deserved by leaving me sick and in pain. But I see now that God was there all along, trying to show me that there were things from my past which I had experienced that needed to be worked through. I sense that you've made a significant breakthrough, but you're hesitant to be specific about it. There are things happening in me that I felt I had buried deep inside, but I'm re-experiencing some things that are very painful to remember. You have painful memories that are causing you some emotional pain? Yes, I feel that there are some things that are best left alone, but I keep being made aware that God is leading me back to these memories for a reason. Even if I want to keep these memories buried, I feel that God keeps pushing me back to deal with them. You feel there might be a connection between past memories and your illness? I don't really know, but God is permitting these memories to surface for a reason. It sounds like you're ready to move into dealing with some of them. I guess I am. Kate began with disappointment, yet as she accepted this disappointment, a more significant experience of God's work in her life was emerging. Kate was experiencing God as present in this phase of counseling, as doing something significant that might lead her toward her desired goal. This desired goal was her physical healing. She no longer experienced God as absent. She experienced God as present in her life. It is important to explore some of the ways Kate was experiencing God as present. First, she experienced God as one who was caring for her in the midst of suffering. She no longer experienced God as absent, but experienced God as one who appeared, attended to, and comforted her in the midst of pain. Rather than push God away by accusing God of not caring about her pain, she began to allow God to nurture her in the midst of that pain. Prior to this acceptance of what God had to offer, she had rejected God's offerings, insisting instead that God heal her on her own terms. She also experienced God as being an active God whose presence challenged her to grow. Not only was God present to bring comfort and warmth in the midst of pain, God was also present to challenge her in areas of her life that needed attention in order for her to grow. She felt God was bringing forth painful memories from the past for a reason. She resented God's challenging her in this way, but she still felt God was doing this in her best interest. She began to experience God as a master therapist who knew what was standing in the way of her healing. She was feeling challenged by God to grow in areas that were emotionally painful, but she knew she must allow God to lead if she was going to progress. Kate also experienced God as one who could be trusted. Trusting was something new for Kate. Her primary experience of human beings was that they could not be trusted. She had said that vulnerability was a curse. Therefore, she sought to reduce her vulnerability by taking full control of her life and refusing to trust anyone with her feelings. She had transferred the same lack of trust to God. Therefore, the major struggle for her was to learn to trust God enough to follow His lead. As counseling progressed, she began to feel that God could be trusted, and she felt that such trust was also leading her toward health. In stage three, Kate began to use new terms to express God's presence in her life. The primary term that Kate used to express His presence and work was Spirit. God's Spirit, moving in her life, was giving her hope. The Spirit was enabling her to experience God's affirmation and God's concern for her healing. She felt that the Spirit of God was leading her into a new future. From her Bible reading, Kate chose a story in 1 Kings to express the work of God's Spirit in her life. The story of Israel, King Ahab, and the prophet Elijah. Kate brought this story into a counseling session around the fifth month, in the third phase of the counseling process. She said she was like Elijah and the rain. She could not see the healing in her life, but she knew it was on the way. She also saw herself as Elijah's attendant, who had to be obedient to the prophet if he was going to see the rain come. She knew, too, that she must cooperate with the dynamics of God's Spirit. As Kate began to think about past relationships, issues she had experienced with men in the past began to surface. Kate distrusted men. Her relationship with her father had been marked by his constant verbal put-downs. Moreover, as counseling progressed, she revealed that in addition to her father's verbal attacks, older teenage boys had abused her sexually in her childhood, leaving her with a deep distrust of males. She felt vulnerable around males, and this feeling of vulnerability manifested itself within the counseling relationship. Wimberly writes, "I always felt I had to be very careful in how I worded my interventions. I felt that at any moment she would explode and unleash her anger on me. I wanted to avoid confrontation long enough to cement a working relationship with her. Therefore, I was very cautious and gentle with my responses. Eventually, it became clear that I would have to risk experiencing Kate's fury if I was to be of any help to her. Therefore, I resolved that our relationship could stand the test of a confrontation. About 7 or 8 sessions into counseling, I decided to focus on how we were relating in the sessions. Kate came into counseling one day and raised the concern of termination. She said that she felt I was not hearing her, that I really did not care for her, and would never be capable of understanding her. Of course, I felt defensive and felt my effectiveness being severely criticized. However, I felt that to respond out of defensiveness would only impose my problem on her, and it would not help. As soon as I had my own feelings in check, I decided to explore Kate's disappointment in me. She accused me of being critical of her and stormed out of my office. I felt that I had really blown the counseling and Kate would not return. Yet, on the other hand, I felt that counseling would not progress unless I was willing to discuss what was taking place between us. I also decided to let Kate contact me if she wanted to continue. Later that week, she called for an appointment. I decided that I needed to explore further whether she could trust me enough to stay in counseling with me. She responded that I was more gentle than she wanted to admit, and she felt that I had been sensitive to her feelings. She also said she felt that I cared for her, although it would be hard for her to really trust any man. But she felt enough trust with me to continue counseling. Focusing on her disappointment in me seemed to help her talk more openly about her relationships with God and with others, particularly men. Following our examination, I felt that we truly had a working relationship. It seemed as if counseling and God's presence through the Spirit were moving Kate in the right direction. The theme that she had experienced her body as alien to the rest of her life and existence also reemerged in stage 3. It emerged in a discussion of the way she dressed. In one counseling session in stage 3, Kate seemed to be very neat, with an erect posture. Sitting with her feet firmly planted on the floor, she gave the appearance of being very composed and together. She always wore a light-colored blouse and a pleated dark skirt. Her hair was kept short and she wore no makeup. She is about 5-6 inches tall and very slim. One day I decided to approach the subject of how Kate appeared to me. I had very little reaction to Kate's physical appearance, either positive or negative, and yet I began to feel that my reaction to Kate needed to be explored with her. I had no way of knowing if my reactions were accurate, nor did I know how Kate would react to my exploration. I was aware that Kate might think that males are often wrong in reading women's self-presentation. Therefore, I felt that I needed to open this subject with her gently. I approached the subject by saying to Kate that I had been noticing how she dressed. I indicated that it was very simple and neat, but that it seemed to me to be an attempt to keep people from noticing her. Her response was immediate. She said that she intentionally dressed this way in order to appear neuter in gender. This led to a discussion of the negative experiences she had had with sex, beginning at 5 years of age when a teenage male friend of the family who was babysitting introduced her to genital sex. She also reported being raped by an older man who was a family friend. Similar sexual encounters continued for several years. These experiences taught her that it was better to be neuter than female. Kate found these experiences difficult to talk about, feeling that somehow it was her own fault that they had happened. She felt that there must have been something wrong with her that something like that could happen to her. As she talked, her voice maintained an even tone, with no changes of pitch. There was very little affect. It was as if she and these experiences were far distant from each other. Kate also described having had difficulty accepting herself. She described her first menstrual cycle as a complete surprise to her, for neither her mother nor any other female adult had prepared her for this point in her life. Kate also reported having been very fearful of getting pregnant. She also reported her first awareness of hating her body at this stage of her life. She said she resented being a woman. When I asked her when she was first aware of resenting that she was female, she described being rejected by her father. She said she remembered being teased by her grandmother as being her father's son. In fact, she said that her father had treated her like a son. However, when she came into puberty, her father began to withdraw from her. She felt that her dad withdrew from her because she was becoming a woman. She expressed sadness at the loss of her father at that time. She also felt that her mother was not available to help her pick up the pieces after losing her father. She felt abandoned and rejected. Turn the cassette to side B now, and we'll continue. Pattern designs and flowers. She began to talk about how frightening it was to be feminine. She hoped that no men would notice the change. Kate was also grateful that she could talk about being victimized and about some of the sexual encounters without being judged by me. She had condemned herself and her body for being the culprit in what had happened to her and reasoned that if she were neuter, no one would ever be able to take advantage of her again. She did not yet feel that men could show an interest in her, but she seemed increasingly interested in the possibility. She began to reveal that she had a secret love. She did not want to reveal any details about her secret love, but she said this was a new experience for her. Later, she said that her secret love never knew her feeling because she could not stand the thought of being rejected by him. She did feel, however, that it was a different feeling to have positive feelings toward a man who could be a possible companion. She said that feelings she had not had in a long time were coming to the surface. When Kate began to experience her body as part of herself and when she began to have positive feelings toward men as potential companions, she also began having dreams that reflected emotional growth. As the themes of God's presence, of distrust of men, and of the alienated body emerged, Kate said she was aware of God's leading. Although she had not wanted to deal with the past, she felt God pushing her to do this. Returning to the past was painful but helpful. During the work described in this section, prayer took the form of prayer discussion that focused on where God was at work and what God was doing. However, specific prayers were very few. Turn the tape now to side B.